creative is the number one lever for success in paid media. At Motion, what we really believe here is like there's two types of brains, two types of people, and two types of teams who ultimately make this come to life. We have our media folks who are ultimately data heads, and we have our creative folks who are exactly that, creative and conceptual. They need to operate in lockstep, but what makes them great honestly creates a disconnect between both of them. So when we're talking about breaking down those silos, really what I'm saying is like the steps that I'm walking through here are helping bridge the gap between those two sides of the brain, people and teams, so you're able to output the best creative possible and just like make money, money, money. Super excited for today's podcast. Creative is, as we all know, one of the most important parts or the most important part of any advertising campaign, which we talk about on this podcast all the time. Today, we've got resident creative strategy expert Evan Lee from Motion here to give us a little presentation on what goes in to creative strategy at the highest level to help drive brands forward. I know it's a question that listeners have all the time, how to find more winners, right? That's what it comes down to, Evan. How do you find more winners to help scale your campaigns?
I know. Well, Eric, first of all, super happy to be here. Audience, super excited to have your ears and eyes. When it comes to those winners, that's what this is all about, right? And like Eric said, creative is the most important lever for success. I'd like to have the update that there is a silver bullet to make it happen. But personally speaking, what I really lean into is a process more than anything. It's like, how can you follow these set steps that are going to consistently output learnings and therefore potential winners along the way? So I can get into it in a bit, but just at a high level, I don't know if there's any silver bullets, man. I think you got to follow that process.
But I think that's the scary part, because it's like, any bullets you fire cost a lot of money. So anytime you're testing new creative, if you feel like you're spinning your wheels and not actually getting traction, if you're not like forging winning elements of your ad and actually progressing towards, you know, profitability, it's a scary feeling when you're spending your money on those bullets.
100%. And I've been there. Like, I've run these ad accounts, I've worked with creative teams, and I've scaled up different clients. So on my end, I hear everybody loud and clear. The place that I go back to are those set steps. So I'm not saying like immediately you have to create something, spend a ton of money on it, throw it into the ad account. The very first place I start is like understanding who your avatars are. So before you spend any money, and it's just your time at this point, it could be if you're a salaried employee, that is the money. But ultimately what you're doing is like, hey, if I'm a brand that sells sneakers, how can I go out into the world to start to understand what's happening? Is it helpful if I like share my screen and show slides?
Let's do it. This is a fully visual podcast. We're trying to get more people over to YouTube. So if you're listening to this now on audio, you're going to be able to get lots of value out of it from audio. But if you want to see these sweet slides, go over to our channel on YouTube. We'll have it linked in the show notes. But if you just search D2C podcast on YouTube, it'll take you there. So take it away, Evan. I'm interested to hear this presentation.
Perfect plug. That's the perfect plug. So essentially, I'm skipping over a couple steps, but I do want to get into the meat and potatoes for folks here. So like I said, before we jump into any type of launch or any type of creation, the very first place that I like to start is this first bucket for everyone who's tuning in and can see is on the research end. So research is all about building those avatars and personas. And really what you're doing is you're starting to understand who your buyer is and what their pain points are before moving to these steps here. So if it's cool, Eric, I'm literally just going to jump in and showcase to folks like how they can actually make this come to life. Yeah?
Let's do it.
Awesome. So when I'm talking about research, the most basic version of this is ultimately answering 6 questions. Okay? Like, this is where we ultimately start. The first 3 of them are really related to what you know to be true about your brand. So that means like, what are the value props you lead with and the selling points you hone in on? Understanding your past purchaser characteristics and understanding historical performance. What this is going to uncover are a lot of the pain points that are associated with the product and ultimately what you help solve. But on top of just like what you know to be true, that's only one side of the coin. The other thing that we want to do is understand how people are talking about you. So what they're saying about you in the wild, ultimately. So there's so many different ways you can ultimately do this, but 3 of the easiest that I come back to every single day of my life is just looking through your organic social and paid social comments. It's like, what are people talking about? Are they saying you don't ship to a certain geography and that's an untapped market for you? Are they saying how good of a job or strong of a job you did at solving a problem? Start to learn what that means for you. You can then jump over to your reviews. So whether that be website-based, Google reviews, Amazon reviews, doesn't really matter. You just really want to uncover both the five-star and then the one-star side of things. So what do people love and what do people hate? Those are the extremes. And that starts to uncover those specific angles and pain points you can dive into from a creative standpoint. And then finally, from a visual perspective, what you're starting to do there is understand the look and feel of how your consumer already talks about you. So you can look at your tag posts on social. You can look at the For You page that you have going on, just on the TikTok side. And what that's going to uncover is like, you have a picture of the pain points. You have an idea of where you're helping people. And this is how your customer organically talks about you in the wild, which starts to build a framework for you before you've started investing any dollars into creation. So the first thing I think about in short there, Eric, is like research, build out those personas, understand the pain points and make it come to life. You know what I mean?
100%. Good starting point for sure.
And then like, everybody's probably wondering, it's like, Evan, I'm following you. You've come to the place of how you're able to then say like, this is my persona or these are the pain points that I want to solve. And then the question becomes, what's next? Do I just go ahead and create a bunch of crap that I don't know is going to work? Or what the hell do we do here, right? So that's why this next step of our process is ideation. So ideation is doing a combination of things. You're number one, determining the appropriate look and feel to match the persona's desires. And then number two, you're doing a ton of prioritization to just understand where those efforts should be placed. So let's dive into both of those buckets. The first one there that I had mentioned is all about the look and feel. So the way that you can start to understand look and feels is a couple different ways. So you can actually just build out like a shared group chat that you're just sending ads back and forth or sending posts back and forth that you're super into. Another thing you might want to do is just like share a spreadsheet, maybe of competitors, yes or no, or just whoever in there. That's an inspiration to the look and feel you're looking to achieve. And then finally, there's tools out in the wild, right? You can use tools like Foreplay to just be able to save ads really, really quickly and build boards out to understand the look and feels you're hoping to achieve there. The other piece I'll mention just on the look and feel front is like, it's great to look out into the wild, but please, if you have it, don't forget your own data. So what you want to be able to do is dig into special moments or just periods in time where you know that you saw success. Something I always highlight is like Black Friday, Cyber Monday, what went down. So it's just getting a sense of what was the offer, how did it look, who were you talking to? And most importantly, the associated metrics. Because you have those numbers, that lets you know truly what's a winner rather than just what your heart gravitates towards, more or less. And then once you have that appropriate look and feel to match up with the personas that we built out in step one of research, it's all about prioritization, like I mentioned. So I love to give the community shout outs. Nicole is amazing. If you don't follow her, tap in, you definitely need to. But Nicole here has a really awesome template. So what you're essentially doing is you're building a prioritized backlog of what you think you will be able to basically output. So this depends on a number of different things. Number one is just like the impact that it's going to make. And where that typically comes from is like you've prioritized your pain points on what resonates the most and which one you want to dive into. Number two, you're going to dive into ease of build. And what that's usually related to is like, do you need to do studio shoots? Are you going to work with a creator who's offsite? Can you just jump into Canva and bake something out? And then number three, it's just like the priority. Now that you understand your impact and your ease of build, you can prioritize on which cadence and which cycle do you actually want to make this come to life. So at this point, instead of just saying, let's be costly as hell, invest a ton of money, and let's bang some stuff out, you've done your research to know who you specifically want to go after. And then most importantly, you prioritize all the hooks, angles, and concepts against the personas you've built. So you can do it in a really educated way to make it come to life. So that's how I think of the first two steps, just to be smarter about your dollars instead of just like throwing spaghetti at the wall at the end of the day.
And just make sure, I like the category coverage there too. Like with, you know, there are only so many like kinds of ads or angles that you approach. And I feel like just keeping track of, okay, I've gone after the clean ingredients angle. I've gone after the pain points angle. I've got some UGC here. Just making sure you're covering all your bases. You can kind of see it all in one place.
That's super important. And I think the big piece here is, we'll talk about it in a second with the next step. But when you document this and you have a home base for what problems you're solving, the avatars you're solving them for, and then like the actual concepts you want to build, it invites other people into the conversation. I'm not the biggest fan of like designing by committee by any means, but there needs to be collaboration. People need the context of why they're doing things. And this is a really good home base to make it come to life.
it's easy to get siloed in this, even in our media business, in the newsletter business. The amount of times when we get the team together and I'm like, oh, by the way, I just talked about this on the podcast and get that. Like, once you kind of break down those silos, it opens up a lot of opportunity.
Entirely. And we've kind of jumped over this point a little bit, but like, Eric, you started off this entire conversation with the gospel here, but it's like creative is the number one lever for success in paid media. And then at Motion, what we really believe here is like, there's two types of brains, two types of people, and two types of teams who ultimately make this come to life. We have our media folks who are ultimately data heads, and we have our creative folks who are exactly that, creative and conceptual. They need to operate in lockstep, side by side, step by step, all that good stuff. But what makes them great honestly creates a disconnect between both of them. So when we're talking about breaking down those silos, really what I'm saying is like the steps that I'm walking through here are helping bridge the gap between those two sides of the brain, people and teams. So you're able to output the best creative possible and just like make money, money, money.
At Pilot House, we call that being on the same skis. We were talking about skiing just before in the pre-interview here, but that's literally, you got to get your creatives and your data heads on the same skis, going in the same place, ideally incentivized in the success of the ad as well, which is a Pilot House thing.
I love that. I love that. Like the creative team, so many times throughout history, and like I hope we're turning that coin now, like doesn't really get a seat at the table to make those decisions. They're just often told what to do. And there's something so empowering about being able to say like, I know why they've made those decisions. I've contributed to those decisions. Now I know exactly what we're making. So it's a really clean story.
All right, take us back into the presentation here. We've got our starting point where we're getting good coverage on our angles and our creative.
Yep, we've built that stuff out. The next step is arguably the most important because you've done a ton of work. And the question then becomes, how do I translate this to all the necessary parties that are involved? So the brief is a translation layer for what needs to be done here. Now, my brief isn't pretty. I'm going to be completely honest with you all because I know everybody has their own unique way of briefing. But what I really like to hone in on from the briefing side is you always want to lead with a hypothesis. So too often we get into the nitty gritty or whatever context it might be, but we want to have a hypothesis that's also a goal. So I'm going to dive into my like media buying creative lingo more or less. But the example that I showcase here when we're thinking about a hypothesis is in this term, I'm looking at an iteration opportunity. And iterations to me mean how do we make small changes to existing assets rather than doing net new all the time. So being very focused in the type of changes we're making. And what that means is the metrics that I'm honing in are my thumb stop ratio or hook rate or my conversion rates. My thumb stop ratio is obviously telling me how many people watch the first 3 seconds of my video. And for layman terms, that just means like you need someone to stop their scroll in their feed before they click to go to buy anywhere else. And then on the conversion rate side, it's who's ultimately buying. So when I'm working with my creative team, what I'm able to say is like build out a hypothesis that's rooted in data and centralizes everybody. So my hypothesis could be it's like, team, I want to increase my thumb stop ratio so more people are stopping their scrolls, but I want to maintain a similar conversion rate because the story is absolutely crushing it. So my ask for you is very straightforward. I want for this specific creative, 2 new versions where all we're doing is swapping out the first 3 seconds on that front. So being able to evolve and be specific around like what we're testing is so necessary in this process.
You want to hook the user, but not with something totally irrelevant so that it impacts your conversion rate.
Exactly. And this is where like I always say the creative brain starts to come to life because what you could do, and we see this all the time now, are like mashups. Like in a sense, it's somewhat random and there isn't a ton of cohesiveness, but editors really shine. The ones who can nail those mashups are like, I'm so impressed by. It's like, it doesn't look choppy. How did you do that? This is perfect. I'm happy with it.
quick plug for your newsletter too. I think thumb stop is such a good term in our industry because it just reminds you that these platforms, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, they're all interruptive platforms. These people aren't there for you. They're there for whatever else they're doing on their feed. And so you have to, in this interruptive platform, you've got to get good at that thumb stop aspect.
Well, thanks for plugging our newsletter. Appreciate it. We're cranking out a ton of good content every single week. And Eric, I completely agree. There's humans on the other side of these ads, ultimately. And how do we want to interact with these humans and what are the natural behaviors? So I'm with you, man. I'm with you.
And they all got thumbs. So let's get stopping them. We'll put a link to thumb stop. We'll put a link to thumb stop in the, so if people want more info, they can download that as well or subscribe.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Cool. Well, everybody, this is the briefing process. I've overly simplified it. Again, I know you all have your ways, but again, if you're going to try something tomorrow, it's that hypothesis. Just bang that out so everyone's on the same page. Once you've done the work of building out your brief and translating it, we then move to the content creation and launch phase. Now, I'm not going to talk about that too much because they exist in their own worlds pretty easily. So, I mean, they're like the creative teams, like really excel here. And on the launch side, our media buyers really excel. We can talk about testing strategies, but just not thinking about it for today. And then what I will say is once you have launched these creatives into the account and you now have some data to look back at, it's really important to move to our creative analysis stage in retrospectives specifically, because we've put in so much work up until this point. And like Eric kicked off with, we don't want to waste our dollars. So we want to make sure that we're learning from this process no matter what. So in my retro stage, what makes a retro so easy is that we started with a hypothesis that we're ultimately looking at. Okay, folks? So what I mean here is if we just do a quick rewind like 15 seconds ago to the hypothesis we built, what we were looking to do is we were looking to increase our thumb stop ratio, but maintain our conversion rate. So what that means is on the dedicated time frame that we've allocated to this, we can literally just build out a report and say, okay, on one side, I have our control group. That's the asset that I decided to make changes off of. Beside that, I have our V2, and that's where we've made a change to the first 3 seconds with a specific look and feel. And then the V3 with another specific change with a specific look and feel. And by setting it up this way, we're really easily able to validate our hypothesis true or false against the control group. So we can literally say like, okay, did we see what we want from V2? Nope, we didn't. Did we see what we wanted from V3? Yeah, we did. Fantastic. Let's do more of that and continue along the way. So that's why I say like when you're retroing that hypothesis, and why I encourage everybody to start there, is going to allow you to really say like, was this successful or not? And a lot of the times, like, we forget to recap all that hard work we've done.
And then just specifically to get this in your platform, are you just basically setting up campaigns with these as ads within an ad set? Is there anything specific that has to be done with the way you set up your campaigns to make sure it reports this cleanly?
Very good question. Context for everybody. I didn't even mention it, but this is Motion that you're looking at on your screens today. So making it easy. We're extremely flexible. So once you're in, literally you connect via API. Within 15 minutes, all this information will be in here. Once you create the report, nothing fancy to it. Just set your metrics and you're good to go.
I've looked at so many metrics reports in Ad Manager, and it's so easy to not get the data you're looking for, or to get the wrong data, get data from previous months, or just not isolate down on exactly what you're looking to do, and you have to hunt and click through all of your campaigns and your ad sets to get that info in a lot of ways. So it's cool to see it all in one place.
100%. And in Ads Manager, like, sometimes where we get a little bit lost in the sauce is like, for the media buying folks who are listening in, like, we know we run the same creative across multiple campaigns, across multiple audiences, right? So we might look at one specific ad in one specific campaign and one specific ad set and say like, it's crushing it. We got to do more of this. But that's not the full picture, right? So within Motion, what we're ultimately doing is, as much as I say it's super simple, like, we're doing work on the back end too to make sure all of the same creatives are grouped together. So you're seeing holistic creative performance rather than getting lost in the sauce of one specific ad that might lead you astray there.
And you're comparing apples to apples, right? Yeah, you're isolating the variables as necessary, so you're not getting noise in the data.
I love that. Cleaning it on up. Yeah, that's great. That's great. So everybody, we've come to the place of being able to like retro what we've done. And I've painted like the picture perfect example. It's like, I've done a test and guess what? One was false, one was true. I know exactly what I have to do next. Oh my goodness. But if we're all real with each other, this does not happen very often. Like, we wish it did, but it does not. We're searching for that new winner all the time. But the really good thing about the creative sprint process is I've walked through every step here, is that it makes it super simple to actually go ahead and look for additional opportunities where it makes sense. So let's imagine a case where it wasn't true and false. It was literally false and false, like we'd expect. Instead of just continuing to lean into the first 3 seconds, we can now start to look at other areas of opportunity. So in my case here, what I've started switching up is, instead of looking at the first 3 seconds and minor changes, I've now jumped up and I'm looking at big swings and net new ideas that we want to come to life. And my starting place for making this happen is actually with influencers and UGC creators. So for anyone who can see this, I have my trusty transformers in my table that I'm looking at here. Not the exact creative, just the creator's overall performance. And now what I can do is in my team meeting with my influencer manager, my creative team members, and everyone else who's involved, I can curate conversation around performance here and build out a new hypothesis. So that means I might literally say, Optimus Prime, we've spent the most money on you. We can see that, but returns aren't great. Damn. Where Bumblebee's actually killing it right now. We need to do way more with Bumblebee to make this come to life. So everybody, let's focus our energy and efforts here. So that means the new hypothesis will build for the following creative sprint, following those steps that I'd talked about earlier, is actually investing more dollars into Bumblebee and specific creative will generate more ultimately revenue for us on the other side of things. And then you're following that same process of creation, launch, and validation of hypothesis and true or false on that end. Once you're trying all of these different ideas and branching off into different streams, we call them creative sprints. I didn't mention it too much, but within your sprint cycle, you really want to make sure that you're not losing this information. So whether it's in a spreadsheet, a Google Doc, but within Motion, like we have a way to visualize this, you want to make sure that all of these different tests and hypotheses that you're trying are actually tracked to be able to say, like, at the end of the year or even shorter, quarter or month, like, what went down? Where'd we spend those dollars? What'd we launch? What actually won? So creating that log will memorialize all of your learnings instead of letting them slip away into a black hole or a galaxy far, far away, as we shout out Star Wars.
I like it. We're going through this right now on the D2C ad side where we've had one ad and one angle essentially and one specific ad be what's driven all of our subscribers for the past like 6 months or something. We can't find anything to beat it. And we're kind of stuck in our tracks a little bit with it. So I'm thinking about, I want to put together contests and get more net new ideas so that we can not just be reliant on tweaking this one aspect of this one angle that appears to be working. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's probably something that more people face as well.
I would agree. And I didn't show this a little bit earlier, but if I jump back slides, like where this kind of brings me to is I started in a place of the creative strategy flywheel. So got quite granular with it, but there is a step above this to make sure we're consistently pushing ourselves forward. So where I jumped to is I spoke about, this is all nested within what we call a creative sprint. And within a creative sprint are the two types of basically categories that I've alluded to throughout the presentation. So really what that means is like on one end, like you're saying, those new ideas, those new concepts, and then the variations that come with it are super important, as well as with the example I gave on the iterative side, what smaller changes are we making based off that data? So I think the big thing is like the way you're thinking about new offers is super important. And it's like, how do we create a cadence where we know to come back to it more frequently? So what I've painted here is just when we think of it, new concepts are harder, take more effort, brain power, resources, all that kind of stuff. So it's like that might take us every 30 days or 45 days. So it's like, let's plan it out so everyone's planned and aligned on what can happen there. Whereas on the iterative front, it's a lot easier to bang that out. We have the files, we can make the small changes. So let's actually shorten that up. Let's follow every 14.
And it's super important that those new concepts tie directly back to your avatars as well, right? Like when you're going to think about who your customers are and what their pain points are. And that, so those new concepts are really what connect through to their pain points as angles, right?
100%. Because once you know a pain point from an avatar, there's so many different things that you can cook up. Like, don't forget to be creative in this process, right? So it's just like you can try unlimited things almost at that point.
AI hasn't taken over yet. We still need that human touch.
AI has not taken over yet. AI is an enablement piece. Like, how do we make sure humans are operating better? And I think Reza, our CEO at Motion, like he says it really, really well. So like AI, there's really two places that it can make its biggest impact. It's like number one on the cost savings. So you just get a lot of time back as an individual. And on the other side, number two is like a straight revenue generator. I don't think any of us believe that like, hey, AI is going to create something that's going to provide a multiple like 5x better than like something a human would have provided. Like, I don't think we're there yet. But where we very much are is like AI can save us time and create efficiencies to get the information we need to succeed.
Especially in backgrounds and things like that. I still think people are a little bit Not everybody. It's funny. I said this on the podcast a while ago, but my friend sent me like a beautiful woman. He's like, I never do this, but this woman's so beautiful. And I'm like, my brother in Christ, that's AI. But so some people really do. They're tuned in on images that are too AI, but a lot won't be, and a lot it'll work for. But I think especially in the supporting aspect, whether it's creating backgrounds or fills or things like that, it's hugely useful.
100%. And like, we're speaking specifically about the creation, so the generative side. So I think like it's still in its infancy, but there's, I don't know, we're seeing what Sora's coming out with and all the amazing stuff there. But I'd say the immediate impact of what I'd spoken about today is like our research phase, understanding the pain points, combing through reviews. Imagine you just uploaded all of your reviews to a GPT. Or imagine you've like taken all your comments and said, scan through my profile and understand. It's like the time you save on getting that information is so valuable, but the output is just as strong. So you can then as a human create the best creative element possible. So I think like when I go enablement, it's less on the content creation side. It's more on like getting your avatars right, prioritizing and all these subsequent steps and even analyzing the data. So all the subsequent steps that I'd shown throughout the flywheel, essentially.
Similar to Motion, actually, right? For how it supports you, gets all your data in one place, puts, you know, gets it in front of the right humans to make the right decisions.
Yeah. Definitely. Like we have strong brain power.
How does Motion work with the new AI tools? We didn't discuss this in the pre-interview at all, but I'm curious, like with things like Advantage Plus, where it's making a lot of those decisions in-house, do you house data about Advantage Plus campaigns in Motion as well?
It's a good question. The simple answer is yes. And then the detailed version becomes like what you desire to know from Advantage Plus. Because the part that we showcase is, again, where we started this podcast. Creative is the most important lever. So we make sure the creative elements are captured. So what that means is like in an Advantage Plus campaign, you could run multiple statics or videos, right? So what we do is instead of just showing you the Advantage Plus performance holistically, we make sure to bust out all of the creative that are in an Advantage Plus. So you can see individually like how that's actually performing. And even if it lives in like one Advantage Plus here, one Advantage Plus here, and like a single image ad here, we'll still bust it out and then group it together. So you're seeing holistic performance no matter what.
And that's just another value where like as a media buyer, you don't want to give up too much control. It's something we talk about all the time to these AI tools. We're learning more and more to relinquish control to AI. But when you can easily back calculate the winning aspects from AI, probably allows you to forge new static images, new static ideas. Like if you can extract more data from those Advantage Plus campaigns that you're actually seeing what's working, it allows you to get more proactive with new campaigns, new concepts as well, probably.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're stemming over into an interesting topic of, I don't know how much time we have, but just on roles. Because it's like, what is the role of a media buyer versus a creative strategist versus a creative team member? Like there is a necessity for all of them, but it's like, what does each person's domain and like expertise lie in? So in general, statement's true. That information is very valuable to determine what to do next. The question just becomes ownership. Like who does that work? I have strong opinions, but I know it's up for debate at this point.
I think it's worth finishing on that. It's definitely something, it's a conversation we continued with Reza as well, just about, I think there's a lot of people like that are expecting hugely analytical work out of their creatives and expecting really creative work out of their analytical people as well. And I think one thing that Motion really forges is, and I think it's, again, there's good alignment with what Pilot House does as well, with this idea of there being a designer, a media buyer, and a creative strategist that kind of sits in the middle, and how important that is for growing brands. Like it's probably one of the fastest growing positions in the D2C world, probably, especially in the ad world.
I think you can probably even speak it better to me with what you're building and the amazing success you've had. But I would agree, creative strategists are absolutely taking off, and creative team members speaking in analytics are so important. But again, media buyers, there's still space for you. Like I'd never want to discredit a media buyer because I come from it. And on that end, like immediately, it's the analysis side. So what's actually happening? I think your data minds are going to be able to pull that out really strongly. And it's also just like the allocation and spend. So it's just like, how are we actually going to spend in these accounts? So what I mean there is like a media buyer is probably going to be the one to understand and look at historical data to say which demographics are we serving the best, which age groups are we serving the best, what are the best angles that we're currently seeing. and then being able to build out a testing structure to align with what they've seen. So I think that'll still live in the media buyer's world of how to distribute to get to the new eyeballs, but all of the decisions might live with creative strategists. So there's a lot of overlap.
We'll have to have you back on. We'll talk about the next phase of that. It's funny because we talk about it all the time on the podcast, this pilot testing where we take our angles, we run control group tests in our ad groups and then forge winners. But I know we've got some people on the Pilot House using Motion. So I'm going to be checking in with them and I would like to eventually make some content about like how Motion enables this concept of pilot testing. It's funny, like Facebook told us, when we did our course on Scale School, and we really like went through, here's how we structure our pilot test, here's how we build it out. One of the higher ups at the SMB at Meta was like, they think that was one of the best training pieces they've ever seen about literally how to use their algorithm to test creatives. And I feel like Motion and the pilot test probably go hand in glove pretty well.
Oh man, we got to make that happen. I love that. I'm fired up.
Just in time for March Madness. Here we go. Get our brackets up.
Have to.
Nice, man. Well, great. Thanks for coming on the podcast. You got to find Evan on LinkedIn, social media. He's got a prolific account, tens of thousands of people jocking his posts. Really impressive work as a business influencer out there. Where do you recommend people find you?
For myself, LinkedIn's the best place. LinkedIn's definitely the best place. I'm also on Twitter at evmklee. Honestly, and just visit motionapp.com. You'll see my face on there. So just book some time. Like, let's get it going.
Motionapp.com. Let's go. Thanks, brother. Talk to you later.
Most definitely. Appreciate it, Eric. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. If you're not a subscriber to our newsletter, you can do that right now at directtoconsumer.co. I'm Eric Dick, and this has been the D2C Podcast. We'll see you next time.